This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian, and here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. This is the podcast that's designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening and Happy New Year. Here are a few of the stories for the week of January 5th, 2026. Heading into the new legislative session that kicks off next week, Governor Katie Hobbs is calling on lawmakers to adopt new programs to help Arizonans dealing with the rising cost of living. Wayne Shutsky reports.
Hobbs says she wants lawmakers to adopt new proposals to provide assistance to Arizonans and increase the supply of affordable housing in the state. That includes a new $3.50 per night fee on short-term rentals that would help expand programs that help low-income Arizonans weatherize their homes and pay utility bills. Hobbs says the new fee would help loosen income eligibility requirements for the federally funded utility assistance program.
Basically expanding the people eligible for the federal utility assistance that the state gets, which we've continued to argue is disproportionately low in Arizona, given our harsh climate in the summer.
Hobbs is also calling for the creation of a new public-private partnership that would help developers get better interest rates when building affordable housing. Wayne Shutsky, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In Tribal Natural Resources, supported in part by a grant from the Katina Foundation. Tribes are trying to figure out how to start and finish renewable energy projects after the Trump administration has frozen or eliminated funds stemming from the Biden-era Inflation Reduction Act. Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
The Nonprofit Alliance for Tribal Clean Energy estimates at least 100 tribes across the U.S. are facing cuts and bottlenecks.
Certainly, the air has been sucked out of the room in terms of funding on the federal side, but I'm really happy to say that all is not lost.
Clara Pratt is Dene and Managing Director of Navajo Power, a Flagstaff public benefit corporation helping build utility-scale projects on tribal lands.
There's still a lot of projects that are going to continue to move forward, but what's also been a little bit shaky is the market and the industry interest in renewable.
Driven by federal decision-making, including grants being canceled, like the EPA's Solar for All program, which would have helped power some 600 low-income homes on a reservation in northern Arizona.
Hopi tribe was forced to forfeit that.
That's Hopi Councilman Darren Melvin.
On one hand, you have this rationale, it being about energy and efficiency, but really the end result of this seems to have nothing to do with efficiency.
Gabriel Pietrazio, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening.
Rio Salado College is hosting the Dash with Rio 5K and 10K Run Walk in Tempe on Saturday, April 18th. This community event welcomes runners and walkers of all levels with early bird registration for a limited time. Details at dashwithrio.com.
In business news, TSMC bought 900 acres of state trust land at auction on Wednesday, teeing up an expansion of the chipmaker's site off Loop 303 and I-17 in North Phoenix. Greg Haney has more on what this means for the mixed land use development planned there.
The city of Phoenix approved the land development last month, which will almost double TSMC's footprint in the area and allow it to add new facilities. Taiwan Semiconductor paid nearly $200 million for the parcel, which is planned to be part of the much larger North Park project that developers say will also include hiking trails and residential units. That expansion faced opposition at a council meeting last month where residents wanted to keep the campus north of Loop 303. In a statement, Councilwoman Ann O'Brien claimed the expansion will allow TSMC to generate thousands of jobs. Money from state land goes toward Arizona's public school system. Greg Haney, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In politics news, in the wake of Wednesday's fatal ICE shooting in Minnesota, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs is concerned about reports that the Trump administration plans to ramp up immigration enforcement activities in Phoenix. From the Politics Desk, Wayne Shutsky reports.
Last week, the center-right publication The Bulwark reported the Department of Homeland Security plans to increase ICE activities in Phoenix, comparing it to recent surges in Chicago and Los Angeles. A DHS spokesperson declined to confirm that reporting, saying the agency doesn't comment on future operations. Hobbs says the Trump administration has not notified her office about plans to increase ICE activity in the state, especially after an ICE agent fatally shot Renee Nicole Good, a U.S. citizen, in Minnesota.
The president ran on going after criminals, and these kind of indiscriminate roundups that gin up fear in communities and create these kind of circumstances are not making anyone safer.
Hobbs says her office is having conversations with the state's Department of Public Safety and the Arizona National Guard about how it will react if ICE scales up operations in Phoenix. Wayne Shutsky, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In education news, the Labor Union for Arizona Public School Educators says voters want accountability and transparency for the state's voucher system. From the Education Desk, Bridget Dowd reports.
The Arizona Education Association has released results from a survey of 800 likely voters statewide. They say it shows voters back reforms to the state's voucher program by more than a 2-to-1 margin. AEA President Marisol Garcia says as state lawmakers prepare for the new legislative session, it's time to pass meaningful voucher reform.
I mean, the irony is that each one of the things we ask voters about that we think are extremely important have been bills that have never been heard and that have not crossed the finish line because they have not even gotten a hearing in the Education Committee.
Garcia says 67% of those polled say they would vote yes on a suite of policies to strengthen oversight of the school voucher program. She says that support extends across political parties, race, parental status, and geography. Bridget Dowd, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. In Fronteras News, Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly are some of more than 24 Democrats asking Trump administration officials about its diversion of federal agents to immigration work. From the Fronteras desk in Tucson, Elisa Resnick has more.
Government data analyzed by the Cato Institute in September shows more than 14,000 federal officers from offices like the U.S. Marshals Service and the Department of Defense have been redirected to do ICE enforcement. An additional 8,500 state and local officers have been trained to make ICE arrests. The letter from Senate Democrats says federal agents have been pulled away from some of the most critical investigations into child predators, drug traffickers, and others, and reassigned to arrest, detain, and deport immigrants, the majority of whom have no criminal record. They're asking about the duration of assignments, the number of officers involved, and other details by this month. Elisa Resnick, KJZZ News, Tucson.
And for a deeper conversation from KJZZ's The Show, a new pilot project offering paid parental leave for Arizonans is saving money for the state. Here's co-host Lauren Gilger.
A few years ago, Governor Katie Hobbs decided to make the state government more, quote unquote, family friendly. That meant a few things, including launching a paid parental leave pilot program so employees who have or adopt a child can take paid time off to do it. It was a pretty revolutionary idea for Arizona, where there are no paid parental leave laws. The only law on the books here is the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, or FMLA, which requires employers to give new parents 12 weeks of unpaid leave. The key there is unpaid. Nationwide, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, 27% of civilian workers had access to family leave, paid family leave in 2023. It's slightly higher among state and local government workers at 28%. So most women, including me, in full disclosure, use sick and vacation time when they have kids. That's a familiar territory to our next guest this morning. Nicole Sorensen is statewide human resources director, and she was the force behind this pilot program for the state of Arizona's roughly 35,000 workers. I spoke with her more about how it's going 2 years in.
Well, it's going really well. So the reason that we started out as a pilot program is we didn't really know what the data would show. And something that we do at Arizona is we measure what we do and we measure the success because we want to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. So we had, as of November 30th, 2025, we had 2,557 employees have used paid parental leave.
Wow.
Which is really pretty exciting, right? Interestingly, the average use is only 11 weeks. So people make the decisions that work for their family, right? And the data that we're most excited about is that 97% of our employees who took paid parental leave are returning to work. And that's the impact that we hope to get, is these are folks that maybe would have left the industry, would have left their careers and taken time off to be with their family, and they feel that they can still come back to the state and serve the state.
Wow. So that's a big change, I'm sure, from what you might have seen before. Or with no leave enacted. Do you have data on how many is fathers versus mothers? I'm always interested in that and whether or not men take you up on this.
So we don't have data per se on the demographics, but we know that fathers are taking us up on this. And that's certainly a message that we have been sending to our state employees, that this is not just a mom paid parental leave, right? So we had some great stories from some of our fathers that took it that talked about how it really gave them an opportunity to help those first few days. If I could share one, one state employee shared with me that they were able to take intermittent leave for several months after his daughter was born. He said he was thrilled to have the opportunity to bond with his baby girl and support his wife with the care and the nurturing. They come back as better employees, more loyal employees, and they're staying with the state.
I mean, so this is not that many places in the country that offer a program like this, even for state employees. There are more coming online. I think it's like 13 places around the country that maybe do this. I wonder why you think that is. Like, usually you'll hear cost brought up. Like, people will say, you know, we can't spend state taxpayer dollars on this kind of thing. How much did it cost? Do you have numbers on that?
So we don't have numbers on the actual cost. We tried to crunch sort of an expectation of what that coverage might look like for employees that had to backfill. But by and large, this is a cost that agencies have been able to sort of adjust for in their staffing needs. And when we look at it, we think about the cost savings. So with 97% of our employees that use this program coming back to work at the state, that represents a number where you're not having to lose that employee, lose the service that they're providing while you recruit for another employee and then train another employee. And all of that represents a potential gap in service to the state of Arizona. So so far, it seems like there's a cost savings here, because as a state HR director, I know intimately how expensive it is to constantly be recruiting and the cost of that turnover. And that's what we're trying to do, is reduce that turnover and keep the top talent in the state.
I know you have some personal experience here. I do, too. You know, we've both had children without leave, right? And you had kids, it sounds like, before this policy came into place.
Yes, I did. I'm a mom of two. I have a 4 and 6-year-old, and I was not able to take advantage of this program. I jokingly say that I briefly considered growing my family to take advantage of this program. But when I was tasked with the opportunity to try to develop a program like this and make something more family friendly for the state of Arizona, I really used my personal experience and the barriers that I felt as a new mom to ensure that we were fixing some of those things. So I'd already mentioned that we were only able to roll over 240 hours, which I think is 6 weeks of leave. When I was pregnant with my first child, I'd been at the state for a few years. I had known that I was going to grow my family, so I saved up those hours as much as I could.
Right.
I didn't take those vacations and things like that. And at the end of the day, I still only had 6 weeks that I could take, right? I had some sick leave, but there were limitations on what is considered sick when you just had a new baby, right? So when you get out of the hospital, sure, you're recovering, but not all the way up to 12 weeks. And so I knew that was a barrier, and I was frustrated. I expressed my frustration at that program. And so I had to come back, I think, at about 7 weeks, and it was a tough time. You know, looking back at the sick leave expansion and the limitation of the 40 hours. My daughter was sick when she was first born, and so it's important to be able to have that flexibility. It's not just giving birth. It's some of those challenges that can happen health-wise with a young boy or girl. So that was something that I really thought about. And then it's been nice now that I've been here for, oh gosh, at the state, I think almost 8 years. It's like I finally saved up enough annual leave to be able to have those vacations, because I was saving them and using all of my time off for pregnancy. Yeah.
Man, have I been there. How long will this remain a pilot program? It's just a pilot program right now. Nothing's been officially adopted. What's next?
So, yeah, I can't speak to what other changes may happen in the future, but the data is really positive. So we are transitioning into that phase of analyzing the data, looking towards, you know, are there any changes that we need to make? That kind of thing. So far, nothing comes to mind, to be honest. It's been wildly successful. We haven't gotten negative feedback from our agencies that are out there dealing with having to cover for folks that are on leave. As a matter of fact, we've had a lot of positive feedback when it comes to decreasing turnover and keeping that top talent at the state.
It's interesting. Let me ask you lastly, I guess, a broad question. We've seen other states trying to do something like this. This is just for state employees. It's not like a mandate for private employers to do this, and it does not exist federally. I mean, I wonder why you think there seems to be a little bit of a changing of the tide here. Some states, like Arizona, trying to make these changes within its own power, within its own government.
You know, I'm not sure I can answer that question. We just know what works here for us. And there's certainly a lot of fear when you come up with a new program like this. You don't really know what the costs are going to be. You can, you know, look at the number of hours and times it by the salary, but that doesn't give you the true cost because it doesn't take into account the cost savings in not having to hire in this and that. So we have seen other states trying to get on board when they see Arizona's doing it and they're doing it successfully. You know, we did our own research as well before we did this program and saw that there are some local governments in Arizona that are getting on board, some more generous than others. But, you know, I think just to say someone has to do it and they have to show that it's successful to erase some of that fear of our other governments.
Yeah. Well, there's the example. Okay. Nicole Sorensen, Statewide Human Resources Director, joining us to talk about this pilot program. Nicole, thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by Helios Education Foundation and Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation, and Beach Fleischman. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vianne. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more online and on the KJZZ mobile app.